listening to The Call to True Beauty on WCLK. The Call to True Beauty is made possible by Verizon Wireless, the Partnership Against Domestic Violence, and Clark Atlanta University. I am Daphne Walker. I'm here with Jennifer Bivens, who is the president and CEO of the Georgia Network to End Sexual Assault. Tonight's topic is sexual assault, and we're taking your questions. You can call us at 404-880-9255. 404-880-9255. You can also post your questions to our Facebook page, which is Jazz WCLK. And we do have a question from Lana from Facebook. And her question is, when we think about rape, we typically think of female victims. If a man is raped, are there counseling and social services to address these needs as with a female victim? What can you tell us about that, Jennifer?
Okay, so the answer would be yes. Just like victims who are female, services that are provided for those victims, there are those same services provided for male victims of sexual violence. So, yes, we do have those same services that are provided for male victims. Again, male victims are going to be they don't report as few victims of sexual assault that report. There's going to be less likely those victims that are going to report that are male. But yes, there are victims. There are victims that are male, and we do have services that we provide for male victims of sexual violence as well.
How many reports do you get from male victims?
Not nearly as many as female victims, but we do get. I mean, they're going to be, like I said, very few, but it doesn't mean that we don't have those victims. There's an organization called One in Six, so basically one of every six males are going to be victims of sexual abuse. But again, their rates of reporting are going to be less than that of females. And we know that females don't report this as often as there are those assaults that are occurring. However, there are, as far as female victims, the rates for young women ages 16 to 24, they're at the greatest risk for sexual violence. And of course, you know, that age is going to be, you know, they're starting to drive at the age of 16, and that also is going to encompass your college age young women. So I think that's, again, also too focused there. But again, we don't want to forget the male victims of sexual abuse as well, because they're going to be out there as well and need services just like the female victims.
All right. Thank you, Lana, for your question on Facebook. We also have now Teresa on our phone lines. Teresa from Atlanta. Teresa, are you there?
Hello, I'm here. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening. How are you?
Hi.
Hi. I have a question. When most people talk about rape, they focus on women ages 16 through 24 because that's usually the target group. Is rape a problem among other demographic segments?
So yes, the answer is yes. And, I mean, we're talking about, sexual violence can happen to anyone. It affects people of all ages, regardless of racial, socioeconomic, or even educational backgrounds. So when we talk about, I think when we look at the stats, right, we're looking at statistical analysis that have occurred with regards to the data that we have. Obviously, we know that that's not going to be telling overall or just or in general with those folks that are not going to be reporting. So we do have – usually when you're looking at those who are at greater risk of being victimized, you're looking at I think Daphne mentioned the case earlier with the victim who had Down syndrome. It's going to be people that are at a disadvantage in some ways, disabled, the elderly, the very young. I mean, there's going to be, victimizations that occur with those groups because there's some other factor involving that it's going to be easier for that perpetrator to unfortunately assault them. But again, with the 16 to 24-year-olds, you're still talking about young, young adults and teenagers. And so, again, so there's some vulnerability there as well that unfortunately that perpetrator is going to focus in on.
All right. Thank you, Teresa, for your question.
Thank you.
All right. The other thing I want to say, too, is we are taking your calls at 404-880-9255 on the issue of sexual assault. And one of the things that you raised was the fact that there are very different populations that can be affected. And I know you brought up the elderly. Is there a particular area where the elderly is more affected than not, in nursing homes or certain environments?
We do have when we're looking at the elderly population, so we do try to work with the Department of Aging quite a bit because we do have the elderly are going to be at a higher risk, particularly if they're in a situation in which they are, let's say they've moved in with a family member. So, for example, we have an elderly lady that has moved in with her grandson, and she supposedly is turning over her monthly checks to her grandson and his wife. But unfortunately, those type of situations in which they're not in a communal living situation at a nursing home or an assisted living home where you have folks coming in checking on them on a regular basis, they're more isolated. In those type of situations, unfortunately, you're going to have an increase in the chance of there being some type of abuse. And even sexual abuse occurring because, again, they're in an isolated situation where they're not going to have folks coming in and checking on them. And maybe they're not able to get up and get out like they may be at an assisted living home. And so so if you're looking at kind of those folks that are more isolated than those folks that are going to be in a more of a group home setting, I think those folks are at a higher risk of being assaulted, unfortunately, by their loved ones, by family members who are supposed to be the caretakers. And unfortunately, they turn out to be the perpetrators in those cases.
We do have another caller. Her name is Eloise. Eloise, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And you have a question for us tonight?
Yes. I was raped by my husband, and I don't hear you covering that topic.
Well, Eloise, I want to say first, thank you for sharing your story with us, because I know it's not always easy to share that information, and also for reminding us to address an area that we do need to address. And that is, you know, Jennifer, when we talk about sexual assaults, we always see it as a stranger on stranger is what people initially think. Then they say, okay, it's somebody you know that you date. But what can you tell us about, you know, Eloise's point that she was married and found herself in a situation where she elected not to have sexual contact, but her husband forced her to have sexual contact?
And I think I'm like Eloise. I'm misstating. I think it's very common. It's a lot more common than what we want to acknowledge. And so I definitely think that that's. And I think too, Eloise, when we talk about it, somebody that you know, that can include your husband. So we're not just talking about an acquaintance or a friend or a classmate or a coworker. We're also talking about it could be your spouse that's assaulting you. And so I want to make sure that, and thank you for the call, make sure that we mention that when we talk about it, somebody that you know, it could very well be your family member that's assaulting you, your spouse that's assaulting you. And so those rates are going to be 80-85% of the perpetrators are going to be the person that may be supposed to be the closest to you, your spouse. And unfortunately, they end up being the perpetrator. And so we know that's very common. And it's, very unfortunate that it's actually the person that's supposed to be your mate in life. But unfortunately, it turns out to be, like I said, the perpetrator, of a horrific crime against an individual.
Okay. And I was also raped in college.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
What happened, the police officers made me feel like it was my problem, my fault, and told me if I went to, going to court, they were going to make me look, he intimidated me, in other words, the police officer.
Right.
So I didn't press charges.
Well, Eloise,
I believe the guy was a rapist because his mother came to me and asked me not to press charges against her son.
Eloise,
and I was in college at that time.
Eloise, I wish I could tell you that was uncommon, but unfortunately it is pretty common. And to Jennifer's point about knowing who that person is, a lot of times people do know that there were accusations made against a family member that they've sexually assaulted another person. And I'm glad you're raising this, because I think another problem that we have, Jennifer, is, you know, when you go to some of our faith-based communities, for example, and these people are supposed to be married, then what usually happens is, you know, they'll tell them you're married, so you have to have sex with your spouse because that's a part of your covenant with that person in that relationship. And we're definitely not here to challenge people's faith, but we are here to remind women that even in the face of that type of covenant, you do have the right to make a choice.
Right.
And I think another point Eloise brought up is about law enforcement and our efforts to continue to train them, not to discourage people to go forward, but to actually facilitate them going forward and assisting them with data collection and evidence collection. And it's unfortunate that Eloise has had these experiences, but I think she has brought to light for us what a lot of people use as a reason to not come forward. And so I'm hoping, Eloise, that your call allows people to realize the importance of coming forward and recognizing that, you know, even if people are trying to discourage you or trying to suggest that, you know, it's your fault, A, it's never your fault.
Right.
B, whether you're married or not, you have the right to choose to be in that relationship. And then finally, you know, still having the courage to come forward and share your story is probably going to make someone else out there who's hesitant come forward with their story. So we appreciate that.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in.
We don't want to encourage a culture of entitlement to where, you know, that there are folks that think that, you know, they're entitled to have sex when they want it, when they say at their convenience kind of thing. That's not the case at all. It needs to be a mutual understanding of both parties are okay with doing this and they want to do this. Not that someone is entitled to do this or push this issue. It's never okay.
We are here, and you're listening to Jennifer Bivens, who's the president and CEO of the Georgia Network to End Sexual Assault. I'm Daphne Walker, your host here on the Call to True Beauty on WCLK. The Call to True Beauty is made possible by Verizon Wireless, the Partnership Against Domestic Violence, and Clark Atlanta University. We are taking your calls on the topic. If you would like to join our conversation on this topic being sexual assault, you can call us at 404-880-9255, 404-880-9255. And we're talking about this topic because April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And we are trying to make sure that we're reaching out to the community to educate them on this topic and also to provide access to counselors who can provide services to you. So even if you don't have a question, but you wish to call in because of your desire to have services, we're here to accept those calls as well. And we have a counselor in the studio to assist you if you're in crisis. We do have Tanisha on the line from Powder Springs. Tanisha, how are you?
I'm well, and yourself?
I'm great.
Thank you.
What question do you have for us tonight?
I can only imagine how awful it must be to have to face a rapist in court and to have to relive that experience in front of strangers. So I wanted to know, what help does a victim advocate actually offer, and what assistance is there for a rape victim after legal proceedings are complete?
Okay, so there's a couple of different services that can be provided. So within the court proceedings, hopefully, what has happened for a victim of sexual violence is that if they've called a crisis line after they've been assaulted, and let's say that they go to their nearest hospital and want a sexual assault exam performed on them. So collection of evidence, that type of thing. Again, this is all their choice. They don't have to do this, but if they choose to do this, they get this done. And let's say that, so there's an advocate there that's called in to the hospital or to that rape crisis center, because some victims are going to respond to the hospital in their communities. Other victims may go directly to their sexual assault center, and there's the exam done there at that center. Again, depending on what community you're in, is going to determine what that process is going to look like. So an advocate's going to show up either at the rape crisis center or at the hospital. And they're going to usually show up with a bag of items. Some of those items are going to be clothing, because the clothing is typically taken. If the clothing are the same clothing that victim had on during the assault, that clothing is going to be taken for evidence. So the advocate will have clothing for them to wear. In addition, there's going to be information that's given to that victim regarding the services that center can provide to them. So they finish up at the hospital, finish up with this either the sexual assault nurse examiner, that physician, with the collection of the evidence, and then hopefully they want to have a follow-up call by that advocate from that center, and that advocate's going to call with a follow-up call a couple of days later, checking on them, and also too seeing if they want to come in then see the advocate and talk about services that are available. So services that are going to be available are going to be helping with, let's say that victim is assaulted on campus. So you may want to talk with that housing unit on the campus, what things can be done on that campus to then help that victim moving forward. There may be then a call to, to that dean, what can be done, that kind of thing. Again, depending on if, let's say that this perpetrator has several classes with them, so that advocate can kind of help them within that situation. There's also, too, looking at when the case goes to court and working with the Victim Witness Assistance Program, what can be done there. Let's say she needed extra medical care that needed to occur. So then you're talking about crime victims' compensation and what that looks like and what kind of services or reimbursement that victim can receive from there. So there's a multitude of services that can be provided, counseling services, if she needs help, and because maybe she had to be away from her job for a bit because of the victimization, totally understandable. And again, there's some things that can be done and looked at with regards to services with crime victims' comp and and getting some of her funding back that she would have received if she had been employed during that time.
And also, I know with regards to prosecuting cases, I was a prosecutor in the Crimes Against Women and Children Unit in Fulton County. One of the other things we did was to make sure we really made that sexual assault victim comfortable in the court situation. And so what we would do is take you into court in advance of the trial, become familiar with the courtroom, where you're expected to sit, where other parties will be seated in the courtroom, and to try to really get that person comfortable with the environment so that you could really focus on your testimony and not the environment itself.
Right.
And also reminding them that you really don't have to look at anybody but the judge that's hearing the case or the person that, is asking you a question, but really focusing on the perpetrator or anything else that's going on in the courtroom. And if they were younger, if they were children, of course, I would take a lot more time because it's going to take a lot of courage just for a child to speak in front of, a 12-person jury and a judge and a deputy and the, perpetrator. So we did take a little bit more time with children to get them really acclimated to the courtroom and to make sure that they were familiar with what was going on in that courtroom environment in advance. And then also, making them aware of, what to expect. I'm going to ask you questions. All I'm asking you is to tell the truth. After I ask you questions, the opposing counsel will get an opportunity to ask questions. And we may go back and forth about that. But your job is just to tell the truth and be honest about what took place. And so I do think there's a lot of prep that goes into that so that we can make sexual assault victims feel comfortable coming to the court system so that we can pursue those prosecutions.
And hopefully the victim advocate from the center, the victim witness assistance advocate, as well as the prosecutor, and then the law enforcement officer or anybody else that's involved are all hopefully, working in a collaborative effort to make sure that, that case is going to, get the utmost attention from that prosecutor and from that district attorney's office, and that victim is going to feel the support that they need to feel going through that process.
You're listening to A Call to True Beauty. We're accepting your calls to talk about the issue of sexual assault. And we have with us Jennifer Bivens, who's the president and CEO of the Georgia Network to End Sexual Assault. I'm Daphne Walker, your host. You can give us a call at 404-880-9255, 404-880-9255. Jennifer, one of the other questions I wanted to ask you is that what has really been in the news lately with the Darren Sharper case, who is a former NFL Pro Bowler. He's also a former on-air analyst for the NFL Network, who is being accused of sexually assaulting women in five states, including California, Arizona, Louisiana, Nevada, and Florida. And he is asserting that all of this, the contact was consensual, and there was even a point where he had prior sexual contact. And one of the other allegations that was made is that he believes that he's too attractive to have to sexually assault someone. And so as a result of that, he does not believe anyone would ever accuse him of that. What do you make of that? I know we had a similar case in Cobb County where the man was convicted, and he also had that similar defense. You know what? I look too good to sexually assault anyone. I don't have to sexually assault anyone based upon my good looks.
Wow. I think that, unfortunately, I think that obviously there are people that think that about themselves or think that they, you know, they're entitled to have sex with whoever they want, whenever they want, whenever they say, and, you know, have, there's no, the other person maybe, you know, doesn't get a say in that. And I mean, that's what it kind of brings to mind for me, is that an individual who they're totally entitled to whatever they want when they want it. And unfortunately, we know that's not how things should be, right? It's an issue of equity.
Well, I want to thank Jennifer Bivens, who is our guest tonight and the president and CEO of the Georgia Network to End Sexual Assault. Hope you've enjoyed our conversation tonight addressing some key issues in the area of sexual assault. This is the Call to True Beauty. It's brought to you courtesy of WCLK, Verizon Wireless, the Partnership Against Domestic Violence, and Clark Atlanta University. I am Daphne Walker. Thank you for joining us on our debut show. And we hope that you will join us the first Wednesday of each month for a Call to True Beauty, where we will address domestic violence-related issues that would encourage you to have healthy relationships and healthy dating relationships. Thank you and good night.
You've been listening to the Call to True Beauty. If you want more information about support for anyone in an abusive situation, you can reach the Partnership Against Domestic Violence at 404-873-1766 or visit their website at padv.org. You can listen to this program on demand at WCLK.com. The Call to True Beauty is made possible by Verizon Wireless. Cheryl Selloway is the executive producer. The show is produced for WCLK by Donna Brock and Rob Maynard. Thank you for listening to The Call to True Beauty.